best foot forward when they're selling that product or service. I like being around entrepreneurs, writing for entrepreneurs, servicing entrepreneurs, because you're dealing with the best they have in this real world. In a free market society, they're the best people. Some of you may have read my article entitled The Undiscovered Hero. The Undiscovered Hero in America. See, one of the reasons I like all of you guys so much is all the media, well-meaning friends and even some relatives, haven't talked you out of being entrepreneurs. It's very hard to do that in this society because the heroes, the entrepreneurs that are depicted are malevolent heroes like JR, you know, for instance, on television. Businessmen are depicted as evil. And 99% of business, there are some crooks in business, but 99% are honest guys. So why I would go nuts if I didn't work. I like work. I love what I do. I would do it for free if I didn't get paid, but I like it even better getting well paid for it. I love getting well paid for it because it makes me feel that I'm providing something valuable, I'm getting something valuable back.
It's kind of like, it's not like going to Vegas and putting a quarter in a slot machine and hitting a jackpot, but what you said earlier, and I hope that everybody heard you, is that it's terrible to have 20 failures or 80 failures, but one winner makes all the difference in the world. I mean, that feeling of accomplishment, it's not really the money. I don't think it is the money. I don't think that anybody in this room is going to think that you're in the business for the money anymore. You could take your money and put it in a CD, or I don't think that you live in Switzerland. You probably take advantage of some of the Swiss bank services over there. But I get a feeling that you're not in the business for the money. You got 10 projects going. You could just go play tennis or cruise all the time. It's the feeling of you get 10 going, you hope 7 win.
It is.
Because it's that feeling of accomplishment that you did something.
It definitely is. You know, and this whole thing of failure, I know a lot of you are sitting out here probably listening. Ted Nicholas, that guy that we see, read his ads, and he's talking about failing all these times. See, we're all taught from the time we're little that to fail at anything, to fail a grade, it's horrible. Isn't that what you're taught? I mean, you get fail a grade. Now, I'm not out advocating people should go out and fail their grades in school. But I believe if you fail your grade in school, nothing bad happens. You take the class over, you suffer the consequences, you learn from it, you go on from there. I think in the real world, everything doesn't work. Now, if you're going to work for a company and let somebody else take the risks, you're going to get a very small compensation for that. But if you're going to be willing to go out and take a few risks, calculated risks, careful risks, recognizing some of them aren't going to succeed, that really is what it's all about. And I think, and this is the people that I know, they have started a business at some point and they didn't succeed. And they never, ever try again. They are so humiliated, so defeated. We live in a country with a lot of flaws, a lot of problems. But one of the great things we have is this country gives you the chance to start again. You're not branded for life as you are in some societies. My seminar in Switzerland, in Germany, and they have bankruptcies there and so on too. When you fail there, boy, it's real tough to start again. Some people do, but it's real. Here, the greatest businessmen, the greatest industrialists in American history, Henry Ford, Woolworth, John Wanamaker, all the great industrialists have had not one but many failures. Many failures. And I think it's very important when we go to a boot camp like this, some of you people are perhaps considering for the first time starting a business. If you think everything you're going to do is going to succeed, it's just simply not realistic. It's not realistic. And your friends are going to say, something doesn't work, they're going to say, I told you the damn thing wasn't going to sell. You get a lot of people that'll. So, but all of you took the step to come here. Some of you have businesses already going. You've been through that cycle, but some of you haven't. And I'm telling you, you're going to have to reprogram your thinking because every direct mail, I don't know about Bill, but even now when I do, I introduce new product. You know, Procter & Gamble, one of the greatest corporations in the world with new product launches, their success of new products out of 10, how many do you think would succeed out of 10? They do all this research. They come out with 10 products. They spend millions. You know how many succeed? A little more than that. A little more than that. Yes, right. 4. 4 out of 10. 6 failures. Now, suppose they had 6 failures in a row, would they keep going? Would you? If you had 6 failures in a row, what would you do? If I had 6 failures, go ahead.
Well, that wasn't my question that I want to ask you. I've been starting different things in the last 10 years, but none of them really made any money for me. And you mentioned that you have to feel comfortable with what you sell, and you have to fell in love. How would you do that? I've never done that yet.
You've never fallen in love?
No.
We're gonna show you how to fall in love.
How do you fall in love with the product? Well, first, I think you examine yourself really carefully, the things you like and enjoy doing. See if within those things, there are some things that are potentially saleable things that would fill wants or needs. One of the things that's been very, very helpful to me, I did this in my company, Enterprise. See, 80% of the people, 80% of us, if you have a job now, 80% of the people, the statistics say, are doing the wrong job for their talents and abilities, because we pick jobs in the United States and spend less time than people spend when they're buying a car. They do comparison shopping and so on. People pick careers on the basis of what their uncle said or some teacher advised them, or they do it on a very whimsical basis. So therefore, very few people are very good. So I'm a big believer in aptitude testing. There's a great organization, a nonprofit organization called Human Engineering Laboratories that I've gone through myself. That's very helpful for me when I was in my mid-30s. And all of my employees, it's the largest aptitude testing company in America. They have offices in about 6 or 7 cities, founded by Johnson O'Connor at the turn of the century. And what it does is enabled you to bring out within yourself what your hidden talents and abilities are. Because only when you know them can you really then deal with some the things that you can do with them. That makes sense?
Another thing, Bill and I spend a lot of time going through magazines and watching TV, and it's coming through the mail at us like you would not believe. And we go through them. We sit there and we thumb through them. We read classified sections of magazines. We watch a lot of TV. And what you find is you go, boy, that's neat. Ooh, look at this. You're learning something about yourself, what you like, and what pushes your hot button every time you do that. That is research. Now, every time you turn the TV on, you watch what they're advertising. Every time you open the magazine, look at the ads. Don't just read the articles. Look what really turns you on when you're looking through things like that. And you're learning about yourself. You're learning what you really are interested in. And chances are a lot of other people are, too. That's why the ad's in there.
That's an excellent point.
We never read the articles in magazines, because articles there exist for one reason. They have a place to put ads on the other side of the page. And in most magazines, the articles are not worth reading. And what we do is we subscribe to, I was talking to some people last night, we subscribe to the AARP magazine, because most of our market and most of your market are going to be people over 40. And if you're not over 40 yet, I hope that you reach that. I hope we all live a lot older. But everybody in this room is probably going to be selling to people over 40. A lot of us will be selling to people in their 50s and 60s, because they're, and I hope this is not true, but they may be the last generations of Americans that have enough money to spend for products we want. Now, earlier I asked you to write down a couple of things on this page. I want you to turn to a blank page and write down one more thing. Write down the word dreams. And what we do, and we do this a lot, and people think we're crazy, we'll walk up to people and say, look, if you had all the money in the world and didn't have to do anything, what would you do? What would your dream be? I mean, if you could do anything you wanted to do in the world and it didn't take money, you had all the money you wanted, what would your dream be? And the reason you want to ask yourself that, and a lot of people that, is for two reasons. One is that some of you are going to be surprised by your success. Some of you are going to be overwhelmed by it. And when it happens, you need to be prepared for it. School never taught you to be prepared on how to handle $250,000 coming in 30 to 60 days. And you can look at sports heroes and TV stars and see what happens to some of them. They don't have the discipline to handle that kind of money. And it's going to happen to you. I mean, that's the biggest disadvantage of this business. And you can ask anybody in here who's had it happen, is that once you start making $10,000 a week, is to stop making $10,000 a week and not have planned for that to happen. So you need to consider that right now. Now, the other reason you want to ask about dreams is, if you can identify a dream that a large enough group of people have, then you have a product. You know, we ask a lot of people, and the dream that comes up, all these people want to go live on a sailboat. They want to go sail the South Sea Islands. They want to do something that AARP did a questionnaire. They asked all the retirees, if you had unlimited funds, what would you do? and they expected 10 or 12 or 13 answers. They got two answers. I know what those answers are. It's called research. Those two answers are, of people over 65 who retire, they want to do two things. They want to travel and they want to write. They want to travel and they want to write. And I bet almost everybody in this room, your dreams are somewhat close to that. You want to travel and you want to write. And you know what I've never seen? A book on how to become a travel writer, or how to travel the world by writing articles, or how to stay at hotels free by being a writer. And if a person packages that up right, and you know that it's what people are interested in, that's a product that you could sell. But that's what we call research, and we're going to talk about that later on. Research.
Yeah.
Yeah, Karen and I, we're going to travel and write, aren't we?
Yeah, and following up on what Bill's saying, too, and to your question about how do you find those things that you really love, people ask me in my seminar in Europe, what do I read personally? What do I key into? Because you want to look for trends, because sometimes the trends that are emerging could tie in with your wants and loves. And one of the ways I look for trends, readers, what I read are the following. Some of what I read, I do a lot of reading to try to keep up with the business media and what's going on. I read the Nikkei, how do you pronounce it, the Japanese newspaper? Nikkei daily paper. I read the Wall Street Journal. I read Reader's Digest. Reader's Digest is a middle America good spotter of trends, what people are involved in, their latest diet crazes and investment trends, and a lot of Reader's Digest is a good idea source for new product ideas, new service ideas, new book ideas. I read all the business magazines, Entrepreneur, Inc., Forbes, U.S. News and World Report.
Ted, I think you should say something here. You read them, but you don't necessarily believe when you read the business magazines. You read them just to see what other people are reading, because you say, look at this article. I know it's not true, but what kind of impact is this going to have
on the
people?
What kind of trends is it? What are people concerned about? What are the writers preoccupied with? Because that gives you the lead to the trends. The retirement magazine is a very good one, the AARP. Join for $5. Join AARP, costs $5 a year.
The Modern Maturity magazine.
Modern Maturity, yes. Excellent magazine. And I agree with you, and it's less influenced, their editorial is less influenced by their advertisers. I know we've advertised in there, and they are much more independent in their approach to advertising than other magazines. They're so successful, they are not obliged to, they don't feel obliged to their advertisers.
Just sort of a piggyback on what you're talking about. Do you usually try, let's say, come up with an idea and then see if there's a market for it, or through all of your reading, you say, well, here's a market, an idea that'll fill it?
Both ways. Well, the other thing I would advise you to do is read everything you can about active listening. See, in communication, people are very focused about articulation in writing and speaking, but the most important part of communication, in my view, is listening. Listening. Listening to people, what their problems are, what are they bitching about, what are they concerned about, what are articles talking about, what are the concerns, because that's where you find how you can fill needs through that process.
What Ted is saying is so important. Any magazine you get, if there's a letters to the editor segment, read them. We listen to, in Hot Springs, there's talk radio. It's called TalkNet. It's nationwide. You should listen to TalkNet because it's 24 hours call-in. And you can hear what people are saying. You can actually hear what the people are saying. And that is so important, to be able to hear what the people themselves instead of what reporters are telling you people are saying. Anytime you can read letters to the editor, that's how I did my first project. I was reading a magazine, and everybody was wanting to know how to solve this problem. And I thought, well, there's an easy way to solve the problem, but you can't tell them in words. So I produced a videotape, and we sold 3,000 tapes in 6 weeks, which is, you know, I decided then, hey, this is a business to be in. But I did that just from reading the letters to the editor. So if you get a technical magazine, and you see 10 letters to the editor about the same topic, and the editor tries to describe it, and he can't do it, you've got a built-in mark there of people who want that product. You can buy the mailing list of the magazine. Those are the people who are writing the letters, and you already know what they want by reading that. So when you get these magazines, be sure to read the letters to the editor.
Did I fully answer your question, sir?
Yeah, I think so. We're just trying to decide whether the product came first or the market came
first.
Oh, okay. We're
going to talk about that later, because that's a whole... I've done it both ways.
One of the most important reading devices, and the reason I'm here today are the newsletters. I think newsletters are very viable in determining what you're going to do or what you're not going to do in entrepreneurial projects. How many newsletters do you have?
I subscribe to a lot of them. I subscribe to Bill's newsletter, to Gary Halpert's newsletter. It's both excellent. I subscribe to a lot of financial newsletters. I subscribe to about 20 newsletters. There's a wonderful newsletter, Jerry Buchanan's, The Towers Report. Very good. Yeah, newsletters are very good because you have the unbiased, singular view of one person who's not influenced by anything except telling the truth and so that the readers are keying into what that individual is saying. In other words, the newsletter editor is relating to his audience on a one-to-one basis very directly. It's a different writing style, a different technique than a reporter uses. A reporter is trying to be kind of a consensus writer, whereas a newsletter writer is being an individual and saying what he or she really thinks. I think it's a totally different process, and that's an excellent point. I'm glad you brought that up. I should include that in my comments about reading. Also, there's a lot of great books. I mentioned before, Carl has books on the... Those of you that haven't read the classic books by Claude Hopkins, by Robert Collier, the books of the past, he's got them all in his... he's got all the ones listed and described. I Love Everything by David Ogilvy. I've had a lot of mentors. Those have been some of them. And you'll learn a great deal about marketing through those books.
Also, one thing about those books, all those books that are written 40 and 50 years ago, you're marketing to those people. If your market is people over 40, you don't want to use MTV-style advertising to afford those people. And that's one good thing about reading those books is you can read what appealed to them 40 and 50 years ago. We structure a lot of our ads and a lot of our direct mail pieces using some of the same phrases and the same layouts that they used 25 and 30 and 40 and 50 and 60 and sometimes even 80 years ago. We have the old Sears and Roebuck catalog, and we have several magazines that are 80 years old. And when we get ready to write an ad or a direct mail piece, we look through those because sometimes the very simplest ones from the old days are the ones that work the best today. There's a lot of noise in society. And if you can cut that noise out of your advertisements or out of your direct mail piece, you can appeal to people a lot better.
You can. Another author that would be helpful to you on a personal level is a gentleman by the name of Abraham Maslow, who wrote about what he called the hierarchy of values. We're talking about before about what success is all about and the things that are really important in life. And Maslow, has anybody read Maslow? Is there many? Oh, a lot of you. Great. I really like his style and his work, and how he develops that whole idea of going to the higher levels of what's really important in life. I don't know how our time is, Bill.
Yeah, we're going to wind this one up right now and start another one. We're going to take a 5-minute break. Let's give Ted a round of applause, please. Again, I want to thank Ted personally. Ted just got back from Switzerland where he charged $7,500, and he has another seminar, a full-page ad.
All right, in this segment, we're going to talk about the mechanics of direct mail. And what we're going to cover and what we mean by the mechanics are the basic things you've got to have, and that's before you have a product, before you have a market, what you have to set up in order to be in the direct mail business. Now, the next 3 days, after we cover this in the next 50 minutes, the next 3 days, you're going to actually see us use a lot of the mechanics, and we provided you the tools to get access to anything we talk about.
And we'll be going into the specifics, like envelopes and sizes and things like that. Right now, we're just going to cover the absolute basics you have to have before you start your own business.
Right. If you don't pass this segment, there's no need to stay any further because you're not going to get in direct mail business. Now, what I want you to do is to turn to another blank page and just write mechanics. And I'm going to give you the things you've got to have, and in the sequence, you're probably going to want to have them. And fortunately, most of these do not cost money, which is good. The very first thing that you're going to want, the very, very, very first thing, is you're going to want to incorporate. Just like Ted Nicholas says, you must incorporate. How many people in here are already incorporated? How many people are not? Now see, if I was an attorney, I'd love to see you raise your hands, because every one of you is personally liable for anything that any employee of your company does
If you send an employee to the post office with a bag of mail and he runs over somebody, you're personally liable. They can come to your house and take your home, and you can be in debt the rest of your life. You want to incorporate to put a wall between you and liability.
And the second thing that you absolutely have to have...
Wait, let me finish this now. We do this a lot. We're going to get married.
That's enough on corporation. No,
no. The second reason you want to incorporate is tax liability. You may not think about this right now, but you will think about it the first time you make $100,000 in 3 or 4 months. As a person, your liability on $100,000 tax pushes about 50% with very few deductions. As a corporation, your liability on $100,000 tax can be very, very, very small, and in some cases it can be zero. I would estimate that anybody in here that paid income taxes this year, if you paid a dollar, you paid a lot more than General Motors did. And that's because the corporation and the tax laws of the United States are geared to give corporations tremendous discounts, tremendous tax advantages. The only problem you have is that federal law is so skewed against you is that you have to spend most of the money you make. You can't save it, and you can't invest it. You have to spend it, which means you, if you go into our studios, if you look around here, we have a lot of equipment. We have a lot of computers, and we have nice furniture and nice offices, and we're getting ready probably to buy another building simply because tax law says if you make it, you better spend it or you're going to pay taxes on it. And as an individual, you can't afford to do that. Now, my advice to you, and I'm not an attorney, my advice to you is that if you need to incorporate, if you can't afford to, use Ted's book because it works great. If you can't afford to, go to a good attorney, have him set up your corporation, and have him set up your accounting system. Do not go to an accountant to have your accounting system set up. And the reason why is under federal law, if you're audited or if you have to go to court or have to provide information to the IRS, the accountant is on the side of the IRS by federal law. He has to be. Your attorney is not. Your attorney is on your side. So if you're going to have somebody setting up an accounting system for you, do you want somebody on your side who by federal law cannot disclose certain information, or do you want somebody who by federal law has to provide information to the IRS, everything he knows plus more? And my advice is, and again, I'm not an attorney, my advice is after you incorporate, have the attorney who incorporates you also set up a accounting system. And I recommend you set up a checkbook accounting system where you account for every penny that comes in and every penny that goes out. But again, you do need to incorporate. That's the number one thing you need. To incorporate, it's going to depend on where you go. Here in Hot Springs, in Arkansas, to incorporate the papers as well as the filing fee, as well as having an attorney, and we picked the city attorney of Hot Springs, who has big political aspirations, will probably be the state attorney and maybe the governor of Arkansas sometime in the future. Pick somebody like that who's moving up so that if you get big and he gets big, you guys can help each other. But to incorporate, it costs us $650, and that includes having our accounting set up. Now, once our attorney set up the accounting system, he advised us to go to an accountant to have it run, but we run it the way he had it set up. And basically, the way a corporation works, I'm not an employee. Karen's an employee, and Karen makes poverty level. We could qualify for food stamps, but that's for tax purposes. Okay, now the second reason.
The second most important thing you're going to have before you start business is the ability to process merchant MasterCard, Visa, and American Express. And it's tremendously difficult these days to get a merchant account if you're in direct mail. It's not, under any circumstances, impossible. But if it does prove difficult, there's ways to get around the problems you're going to encounter with your bank.
Right. If you cannot accept money from your customers for your products or services, you're not in business.
And don't discount American Express, which we have done recently.
Yep.
We only very recently called up and got American Express when we started our home satellite show. And it absolutely amazed us how many people are using American Express these days.
How many people in this room have Visa MasterCard merchant accounts? That's great. How many people do not?
How many people have tried to get it and are having difficulty?
If you live in a large state, you're not going to get Visa MasterCard merchant privileges. It's just not going to happen. If you live in California, you can forget it. It's not because you're not worthy. It's because the banks are in deep trouble. However, in your boxes, there's a little red folder that looks like this, Mountain West Communications. They will take your orders, and they will process your Visa MasterCard. We're going to talk about this in much more detail when we talk about putting your life on autopilot.
Yeah.
But right now, if you do have Visa MasterCard merchants, accounts. You want to do everything you can to keep those.
Now, you should always try first to get your own mission account using a service bureau, which is what Mountain West Communications are. And there are a lot of these, and you should price around. Mountain West is not necessarily the cheapest that there is out there. But you should always try first and go to your local bank. Try to go to the bank that you've been had a long-standing account with for as long as you can. It helps if you can physically bring a bank member, the person who you're applying to, into your offices. If you have some kind of offices set up with your computer going or maybe a little secretary sitting there answering the phone, this is going to help you tremendously.
Ron, how long did it take to get your Visa MasterCard merchant account after you applied? 4 days? Yeah. I mean, they approved you on that day, didn't they?
Yeah, right. And Ron walked into our office. Ron has a studio that's attached to our office. So when the bank members walked in, they walked in through Sissy taking orders, through me sitting at my desk, through into Ron's studio, which is surrounded by equipment. And by the time they hit Ron, you could see that they had made up their mind.
But there was a physical location they could walk in. Now, if you're running your business from your home, or if you don't have a physical storefront address, you're not going to get one. And what Karen said earlier about there are a lot of companies that will process for you. There are a lot of companies, do not get involved with anybody that tries to sell you a Zon machine or a Zon Junior machine or any kind of automatic processing machine, because they don't want to process merchant accounts, they just want to sell you machines.
Yeah.
Don't get involved with companies like that. Most parts, most of you are not going to need it.
Karen.
Wait, someone give her a hand or a mic, please.
Jim, do you have the mic? See, the thing about merchant accounts is the banks don't like mail order, and they don't really want to know what you are. If you say mail order, they really don't want to know. If you've already got a retail situation operating, as I know some of you do, and you're thinking of going into mail order, and you think, well, I'll just use my retail operation, be very careful. If the banks think you're trying to pull one over on them, it won't work. They will cancel your merchant account so fast it will make your head spin.
And once you've been cancelled, you'll never get another one.
No, you won't. So don't try and think you can fool the bank. Don't try and say, tell them your retail when you're going to be mail order, but only be up front with the bank.
Can you explain chargebacks and the pitfalls of chargebacks?
Yeah, you never want a chargeback. What we do is we offer 100% refund on all the products.
Explain what it is first.
Okay, a chargeback is when a customer decides that he doesn't.
We have had a merchant account for a long time, and we have never had a chargeback sustained against us. I want to make a distinction, at least in our experience with our merchant account. We pay 1.39% on our merchant account, and it is, and our processor knows that we're a direct response company and always has, but our paperwork is excellent. Against Visa and MasterCard rules, it is against the regs to give a cash refund to anybody who charged anything on a credit card. So they can cancel you for doing that. So I want to make the distinction that there are very specific guidelines and steps to go through to protect yourself relative to chargebacks, and we've never had one sustained against us, partially because of the quality of the paperwork that we used. Now, in Gary's newsletter a couple or three decades ago, there was this really scumbag guy who, what's his name?
Don't say it, don't say it.
All right, at any rate.
I know his name, but don't say it.
All right, at any rate, this scumbag guy, put out a newsletter, which is, regardless of the man's personality, extremely valuable because we took the language that has satisfied Visa, MasterCard, and lawyers, and everybody that is on our insertion order, and put it on there so that when they sign it, we have it. It is an order, a valid order. Okay, now if there's a problem with the order, we make that right. Somebody's trying to stick it to us, we'll go hammer and tong with them, but we will always give them the credit before we take the charge back. So even though this is an area that's very specific and very picky, it is easily managed, and the rules are, and your processor will tell you the rules, and, you know, this is not a big black hole you're going to fall into. I just want to make this distinction,
well, John,
not send everybody into a paranoid fit.
Is absolutely right, but the reality is that we have less than 0.1% of either people asking for refunds or chargebacks. It's less than that. It's probably it's so small it's not measurable. On a $500,000 sales, we may have $100 in refunds, and you'll have the same thing. Don't worry about it. Unless you're selling a shoddy product. Now, if you're selling a shoddy product, you deserve to get chargebacks. And if you buy something from anybody and it's crap, send it back, because that's the only way you can show them that you think it's crap. Jim's got the handle. Pass the microphone, Karen.
Yeah. I'll just make one quick comment. One of the things that we found helpful as well was not only offering an 800 number for Visa or MasterCard, but offering a signature. And if you have signatures on file when people have, when they actually fill out the little piece of paper and they write their number and they sign their name, and if you have a stack of them that have real signatures on it so that it's not just voice from a 800 number operator to a fulfillment service, it looks good if there's any question about, you know, where you're really getting signatures.
Right. But again, the whole thing boils down to...
It's good. It doesn't just look good. It is good. Thank you, John.
Offer a very good, high-quality product. There's a lot of reasons you want to offer a good product. One is that your best customers are customers who've already bought from you. And the worst thing to do is screw people who bought something from you because they're not going to buy something from you again.
And I just noticed something, too. When you go to see your bank, take your wonderful, high-quality products.
We take all
the
products
to the bank.
So they know what we're doing.
And if we, another thing, when you do get your merchant account, if we say we're going to put on a seminar, most of our products range from about $150, around $140. If you're saying we're going to put through a high-dollar item, because you're going to put on a seminar, go to your bank and say, this is what this is. This is what you're going to see coming through, because they will flip. When you start putting $2,000 through, they will close you down for that. They won't even come and ask you. They'll just cancel your account and send you a nice letter telling you they've done so. So always keep your bank involved in what you're doing and keep them up to date with how your business is going as much as you possibly can.
Yeah, my question is almost answered by what you just said here now, but how you get around, you have a Group M incorporator, okay? Now, you said that you have to be open with your bank. Now, what do you do every time you have a seminar or every time you sell a product through the mail, you go to the bank?
Oh, no. If we're running averages, say, 50,000 month charges, and next month we expect it to jump to $250,000, we go to the bank and say, by the way, we've got a big product going out. We expect our charges to jump substantially. So when you see the numbers go up, don't be worried. And what they normally do is they say, great, we're so happy because we like those numbers.
Yeah, I understand that. The point is, you said that when you make the application, you have to be open in front and
right.
Tell them what you're doing. Now, Group M Production does not say direct mail.
No, but when our bank, as a matter of fact, John has got a good rate because he pays 1 3/4. Our bank, which has changed hands 10 times since we set up, now charges us 5% if we pass more than less than 2,000 a month, because we are listed as a direct mail business, and that's the direct mail rate.
When you fill out the application form, there is no question they want to know what you ate for breakfast
right.
3 months ago. So you,
so
there's no question the bank will know you're in mail.
And if they charge you 5%, that's okay, because if you don't have Visa MasterCard, you're not in business.
So your name, it says Group M
right.
Production, but the bank knows that it's included direct mail, and then
right.
you explain to them
right.
when they go
right.
Back. Thanks very much.
Yeah, our bank is real happy with us.
Thank you.
Okay, that's, now again, you cannot overemphasize the importance of being able to accept money. One thing that Karen mentioned a minute ago is that in 3 weeks ago, we started accepting American Express for our home shopping show on satellite. And it scared me to death that 90% of the orders that came in were charged with American Express. And what scared me was the fact that we hadn't been using American Express. And I'm just worried about how many orders we'd lost because we didn't offer it. And what we discovered is that people in our market, the people over 40 and over 50, they don't use their Visa MasterCards because it puts them in debt, but they use American Express because it requires them to have the discipline to pay off at the end of the month. And a lot of people don't use Visa MasterCard. They use American Express. Getting American Express is a snap. You call them, they ask you if you got Visa MasterCard. If you say yes, they'll
It was probably the easiest piece of bureaucracy I've ever gone through is to get American Express. It was incredibly easy.
Okay, now that's the first two things.
Do you have your American Express set up as a direct deposit like your Visa and MasterCard?
No, we sure don't. No, we don't. We actually mail ours out. What I decided, and this is just the way I decided when I was going to do it, is I wanted it to be as simple as I could without it involving any more of American Express to look at my account as they needed to. And the way to do that is to just mail it in. It takes 9 working days to get your check back. Exactly 9 days, and you're spot on every time with us. So keep it simple. A lot of times when you do the direct deposit, they tend to want to ask more questions about the person who's going to be. They tend to want a card and a person standing in front of you more than they would if you're just mailing it off.
Barry. Jim, give Gary a mic, please. Let me tell you about one of the problems you're going to have here. If you put out a direct mail piece, and if it is successful, say you mail 10,000 letters, and somehow
200 people buy the product, and the product's priced at $100 a piece, so you got $20,000 immediately in your account, and you do that week in and week out. What happens when you got $150,000 in your checking account? What are you going to do with it? You going to leave it there? I mean, that's one of the problems with success. What are you going to do? You're not going to leave. Your $150,000 in checking account is not insured. It's not drawing any interest. But under tax laws, you can't spend it on yourself. You can't give it to yourself, so you have to do something with it. In school, they don't teach you those things. That's part of success. What are you going to do with this money when it comes in? If you don't do the right thing, you're going to end up in jail. We're going to talk about that. Our item three is what you're going to do with that money. Gary, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about a way that you can decrease your chargebacks and make a great deal of money at the same time. The most profitable point in any of your mail order or direct mail transactions occurs the day you receive the order from your customer. And the very same day you get the order from your customer, you should send him a thank you acknowledgement letter saying thank you for your order. You should reference where he bought it. You should reference what he bought. You should tell him that it's on the way. You should tell him that how it is going to appear when his credit card slip comes through. It'll be charged to Group N Productions. It'll be in such and such an amount. You should remind him of all of this. And then you should tell him that you are so appreciative for having been him allowing you to suck money out of him that you have this other outstanding offer that you're offering to him on a very favorable thing. You will get a higher percentage of response, and you will make more money at that point in time than any other point in time in your entire business relationship with your customer. And I'm telling you, that's before he receives his product, and all of you should have it set up so that the very instant that you get an order from someone, that day, not even the next day, that day, they should get that acknowledgement. And if you're going for fairly high ticket items, you should at least entertain the idea of that acknowledgement going out via Federal Express.
If you look in your box, you'll notice a postcard from Hot Springs. We buy those in 10,000 lots. And if you order something from us and you're not a prior customer, we don't know who you are, we immediately handwrite you a postcard thanking you for the order. We handwrite it in blue ink and we send it to you on this either the Hillbilly postcard. I think there's two postcards in there. One with the Hillbilly, one with the City of Hot Springs. Because most people, when they get a postcard, they read it. They're going to say, who the heck is sending me a postcard from Hot Springs, Arkansas? And that's what we do. I mean, we do that for that purpose. Now, I'm going to talk about the third most important thing. We've talked about the first being, what's the first, Kelly? Did anybody write the first one down? This is a pop quiz.
This one was incorporate.
Incorporate. The second one, anybody write that one down? Merchant account. The third one, let's say you run an ad. Let's say you sell 10,000 products. Let's say the federal government knocks on your door and say, you haven't shipped all these products. Let me see your records. What are you going to do? You're going to say, all my records are in boxes? Or, we don't keep records? That'll sound good when you're up on the defense, when the prosecuting attorney says, well, you mean you ran all these ads and didn't keep records? How long do you want to stay in jail? The third most important thing you need is a good record-keeping system, and I highly recommend that you get something, a basic computer system. We use an IBM PC. We have several of them. I think that most people in direct mail right now use the same program. We all use something called Q&A. It's a very simple, easy to use database. You can buy Q&A for $49 from DAC or Daymark. It runs on IBM PC. You can customize the database just the way you want. It is extremely easy to use. You can tailor your records just the way you want. In our boxes, we have an order form. That order form is not so that you can order products from for us. It is part of our order entry system. It's part of our record keeping system. Q&A is by Symantec, and it's a nice database program. And if you buy version 4.0, it's going to cost you $350. Yeah, it's for question and answer. Symantec is the name of the company. Now, there are a lot of great programs out there. We just use Q&A because it's easy. I know that Jerry Buchanan uses Q&A. Does Gary still use Q&A?
Yes, he does, but he probably doesn't know he does.
But you've got to have a record system, because if you don't keep track of who placed orders and you don't keep track of when you ship those orders, you're in trouble. You're in trouble to a lot of agencies. You're in trouble to the IRS. You're in trouble to the postal authorities. You're in trouble to your attorney general, and all of those will land you in jail.
And we are going to teach you in this over the next 2 days an order entry system so that two things are going to be impossible. One, it is going to be impossible for you to cash anybody's check or process their charge card
before that product has gone out. And two, you're not going to be shipping products and then finding that you can't process the card or the check's going to bounce. And you can do that through an order entry system. And I just want to say one more thing. If you did have a delay in your product and you had someone had taken a bunch of orders, let's say you took Bill's 100,000 orders and you're having trouble getting the product from the manufacturer, what you're going to do is send out a letter immediately to your customer saying, we have a delay in acquiring this product. We have not charged your card. Would you like us to tear it up? Or we have not processed your check. Would you like us to send it back? You offer to give that person your money back because of the delay. And because you're doing that, you'll find that very few people will take you up on it. They appreciate the thoughtfulness that you have told them why the product's going to be delayed. And you've offered to send them their actual check back. And you make sure that that's possible for you to do that. You do not put that check through until you know that product is out the door, and that is the way to stay out of jail.
Now, that, you only do that when you can't get product. What we do is if you order today, it's shipped today. And what we're amazed with is that people will call us and say, I ordered on Monday, my product is here Wednesday. And a lot of that is because of Jim Powell over here. Jim, it is his personal goal that everything that's ordered today gets out today. He will not leave until it gets out today. And the reason he does that is because people call him and say, I cannot believe this. I ordered on Monday. It's here Wednesday. What kind of company are you? It's the same way when people call us and want our response pack, our free pack that we send out. They call on Monday. They get it Wednesday. They say, you know, I'm calling you back because I like what you have, but boy, do I like the way you do business. And if you do that, it means it's good business for you, but it means that you can put their money in the bank quicker. You don't have to hold it 10 days.
But
what Gary says is when people are in heat, I mean, people buy when they're in heat. I mean, they're hot for something. You want to ship them that product while they're still in heat. You know, if they're hot today to buy your product, ship it today. Do not wait 4 weeks because they're out of heat. They're in heat for something else. And they'll say, I don't want this stuff. Let's send it back. And they will. Oh, okay, let's talk about the order entry system. You're all going to get an opportunity to use this. Basic IBM system. The order form that you see in the box or in the packet there is the order form that we use. You can take an order form exactly like that and put it on your computer. The Q&A allows you to build it just like that. Q&A is also a database program. How many of you received personalized letters from us about this seminar before you came? Had your name and address and information on that? Q&A allows you to do that. You can embed information from them. You can send them a letter saying we appreciate all the business you did last year. If you have a product recall, which you probably won't have, but you have the ability to do that, you can send letters to people who bought things from you in the last 30 days. A basic computer system is very simple to set up. It's very inexpensive. You can buy a system that will, that an adequate system for less than $1,000. That's with the software. Later on, in the next 3 days, we're going to show you how to build this into a complete custom system, including PostScript printers so that you can actually create the direct mail pieces. But you've got to keep good records. It'll keep you out of jail. It'll make money for you. Our most valuable asset, by the way, is our mailing list. We don't sell our mailing list to anybody, do we, Dave? I said, we don't sell our mailing list to anybody, do we? Our mailing list is not available. Well, it is available, $40,000 for our mailing list, if anybody wants to buy it. But you'll discover that your most valuable asset of your business is going to become your mailing list because your best customers are people who've already bought things from you. And if you have a mailing list and it's in a box or in a file cabinet, you're never going to mail out to it. But if all you have to do is press one button and the letters come out, it's that easy to do a mailing. If you look in your folder, you notice that there are four envelopes that have your name, direct address imprinted on those. And you also notice there's an envelope that's got a real crummy-looking little name and a sticker. You can do that with your computer. You can do direct addressing envelope printing, which is real impressive. It's how you increase your response rate. We're going to talk about why it's important to increase your response rate. Okay, Karen's going to tell you about the number four item. Wait, we have questions. Wait, microphone. Oh, we have a question back here, but we'll get back to you.
Yeah, we just set up a mail order business from Australia.
Speak up.
Yeah.
Are you the wonder from down under?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
How you doing?
Australian attendee.
Uh-huh. I just set up a mail order business from Australia about a month ago, and we gave it to a fulfillment house in California. Now, what happened every time an order came in, they send it out and phone orders the same. But if they don't go out, obviously I'm responsible because I have the corporation, but have I got any comeback through them if there's a screw-up down the track and somebody...
No. You're taking the money reliable.
You'll feel right? Comfortable knowing that you were innocent while you're sitting in jail, and you can tell all your friends, hey, I'm innocent, and they'll say, I'm innocent too, And when you get out, you can write a nice book about it. But, you know, you are ultimately responsible for everything your business does.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Because you can get the electric chair just about for that.
Yeah, you get... Well, what's scary is that the United States has a new law saying that they can go anywhere on the planet to pull people that are wanted in this country. So just because you're in Australia doesn't mean they can't come down there and kidnap you and put you in jail. Can we... Question up here?
Bill? My name is Pat McAllister. Do you keep track of all of the people that respond but don't buy?
Yes. Yes.
And do you continue to send them information on for a while to try and entice them to?
Yeah, I'm going to give you a good example. How many people get DAC catalog? You know, I figure Drew Kaplan, who sends a DAC catalog, he probably knows how many catalogs he has to send you before you place an order. You didn't order the first time you got it. You didn't order the second time, or the third time, or the fourth time. But I bet by the sixth catalog, you placed an order. And that's what we do, is we keep trying to figure out how many mailings we have to mail for you're not going to order anything. And that's why we keep doing the mailing list. I mean, we keep sending to people, and at some point, we say they're not worth mailing to because after six or seven or eight or ten offers, they simply aren't going to buy. So a lot of times, and we did something last year. We did what was a three-wave mailing. We did a first mailing, not so much for the people to buy anything from us, but to know who we were. And then we followed up with a second mailing to get them to know who we were a little bit more. And then we followed up with a third mailing. And by then, they said, we know who these guys are. We read their first and their second letter. Now, here's their third letter. We know what the whole thing's about. And that's when they really bought. So we sent basically an offer for the same product three times. The same offer three times to the same people. And on the third time, the response rate just went skyrocketed straight up. Because everybody knew who we were. They said, these guys are still in business. They're still sending us letters. I mean, each one was a personal letter about Karen and I. At that time, we were close to being married. Closer than I thought.
I just had one question. Is there a special type of printer that gets those repeat envelopes to go out?
You know, we looked forever for a printer that would do direct address envelope and printing. We found this company that had one for $18,000. And we thought, well, we hate to. And then by accident, we found this company that sells envelopes attached, just like those in your box. And they wanted $70 per 1,000, which we thought was pretty high, but we went ahead and ordered 5,000. And we got the envelopes, and then a week later we got a check with an invoice. They sent us a check. And what had happened is the girl in their accounting department, instead of sending the check to the company they bought envelopes from, they sent us a check. And we found that they had paid $30 a 1,000 for those envelopes. So now we know where to buy them. And $30 a 1,000, they're very affordable. You can run them through any dot matrix printer, any wide carriage dot matrix printer. The best dot matrix wide carriage printer on the market is $450. It's an Epson LQ1170. We'll have one here tomorrow. You can print out 400 characters per second. You can turn out 1,000 envelopes an hour. I mean, so it's real easy to do now that we've discovered the secret. Huh? For the envelopes, we're going to provide that. As a matter of fact, Wayne Bennett back here. Wayne, raise your hand. Wayne was so impressed that he signed himself up as an authorized distributor. Now, he's not going to sell them to you for $30. He's probably going to make a little bit of profit on them. But he can also imprint them. And that $30 included the imprint. But Wayne is a good source. We can provide other sources later on.
Bill, Buck Adams from Anchorage. When you and I talked on the phone, you said you'd found this machine that could... Is this what you're referring
to?
Because I thought you were talking about something that could look like a hand address.
Yeah, we can make it look like it was hand addressed in script writing. And as a matter of fact, the printer we use has built-in 14 fonts. Fonts are, if you look in your package there's something called TurboGrafx. It is a different font size. And we're going to talk about this later on. But the new breed of printers can print in any font. There's 300 to 500 fonts. And you can make it so that when they see the front cover, they think this is hand-typed or written by a young lady, which is usually works best if you're mailing to men. Or make it look anyway. You can look like it's an official letter from an attorney using just different fonts. And it's very inexpensive to do. We're going to show you technically how to do that later on. Okay, that was the third most important thing you need is a computer system. We will have workshops later on talking about computer systems. How many people in here already have a computer system of some sort? How many people don't have a computer system at all? Okay, for you three or four people, if you want to get together later on in the evening someday, we can sit down and go through quickly how to set up a low-cost computer system. It's very inexpensive to do. Everybody who's got computers already knows there's nothing to it. Software is what makes it run.
Does Q&A come in a Mac version?
In a what?
Macintosh.
You shouldn't use a Macintosh.
Creative types.
Yeah, use an IBM for business.
Whoa.
Let me tell you why. You can buy an IBM system, a complete system with a 40 megabyte hard drive, which you can double to 80, with everything you want on it for $700. I mean, what does a Mac cost you? Use your Mac for what it's good for, and that's designing and graphics and things. But don't waste your money trying to find, you know, if a good database program on a Mac is going to cost you $500, and it means that you can't run your database at the same time that you're doing your business. In our office, we have IBM, and we have Amigas for our video work. And while my Amiga could do database and word processing, I can't afford to. I've got to have Sissy sitting in front of a computer all day, and Karen's got a computer in her office. And Jim's close to a computer, and I've got a computer, and I've got a portable we carry around with us. And it's just so much simpler to be able to buy multiple computers. I mean, how much does a Mac cost now?
You can get them for about $1,000.
Macs are great computers.
They are great. And you can also buy the databases that go with them, and they're not $500. It is going to cost you a little bit more, but if you're going to do your own layout work, they're worth it. It's kind of a matter of personal, what appeals to you.
So if you already have
IBM because Bill tells you to. Go check it out.
If you already have a Mac, keep it. If you already have an IBM, keep it. And if you need graphic ability on your IBM, get Windows. It really is all relative, because what happens is that, you remember when a minute ago I said, what are you going to do with that $150,000 you get in your bank from your business, your first mailing? You're going to buy computers. I mean, you buy, like, we got seven computers now and two Amiga computers. That makes nine computers, and we've got all kinds of equipment that we legitimately can use in our business. We could live without, but since the tax laws say spend money, invest in these products, which is good for the economy, that's what you end up doing. So if you do a mailing and you end up with $100,000 in the bank and you want to spend some money, buy a computer. It's a good tax write-off, and it also is good for your business. Again, I'm not a tax accountant, so don't hold me to anything like that.
Okay, we're up to number four, and the number four item that you're really going to need is a good phone system. And you want a phone system that is as simple as it can possibly be. Now, we know that eventually you are going to be mailing out so many letters that you're not going to want to or be able to take all the phone calls in your own offices, and that's just wonderful. And you'll want to use a service bureau or an answering service, and we're going to tell you about that. But before you get to that stage that you're mailing out that many letters, you are going to be testing. And we ourselves personally...
Testing. Right. Testing, it means that you mail out...
5,000 of your list. Your list may be 100,000, it may be 30,000, but you're going to take the average number is 5,000 or 10,000 of that list, and you're going to send it out and you're going to test it. Now, we strongly recommend that when you send out that test mailing, you have those people calling your offices. And not only that, you sit there personally, even if you have staff, and you answer those phones. Because when you start answering those phones, you're going to learn some very important things. By the time you talk to 50 people, they're all going to ask you the same three or four questions, and you're going to know, A, what you haven't stressed enough in your pitch, and B, what the people out there are really interested in. And you're going to learn so much more about your target market, and that's how you're going to be refining and improving your mailing continually. And that is what testing is all about, is improving your mailing and improving your numbers. So you're going to need phones. No matter what you do, you're going to need a phone system. We have AT&T, so that's the one I'm going to tell you about, because we found it very simple. Now, MCI and the other people, they have systems also. By all means, check them all out. I'm going to tell you what AT&T has, because it's pretty much a standard in the industry, and this is what we use.
Let me tell them about the physical phones, and then you can tell them about the service we have.
Okay.
We have four lines coming in. Just four lines. You know, if you go down to AT&T and want to buy a four-line system, they're going to sell you a box that sits on the wall and all this expensive stuff. If you say, come wire my office with two modular jacks, each one carrying two lines, you can go Radio Shack and buy a four-line phone for $129. And that means...